Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to University College. My name is Vernon Bless, and it's a pleasure to have you here. Tonight we have a very special guest, but as always, I'm joined by Curtis Moore and Michael Coleman. Gentlemen, say hello.
What's up?
What's up?
So we started this little thing last week where we basically highlight a listener of the week. And so this week, our listeners are going to be Crystal Ashade out of Houston, as well as Denise Dancy, who is out of Big Money, Beaumont, Texas. We appreciate both of you for listening and also for spreading the content and sharing your favorite episodes. So, gentlemen, before we get to the Money Misfit himself, what's been going on with the two of you over the last couple of days?
Not much, man. The main issue is my son's been sick, and the youngest one, the one-year-old. And if you know anything about one-year-olds, when they're sick, it's like the most pitiful thing in the entire world because they can't really express themselves or say, hey, I feel bad because of this, or could you do this? They just cry constantly. So my poor wife's been putting in like super overtime, you know, between running back and forth from the hospital to deliver other people's babies. Mm-hmm. She's been trying to take care of my baby all throughout the night. So she's sleeping like 1 hour a night. I'm trying to help out, but I ain't gonna lie. I'll be falling asleep hard.
So you haven't had another one of those airplane incidences though, right?
No. He don't have no GI problems.
Okay.
He just has his nose is congested and he's teething. Rough couple of days in the Moore household. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, my little mama just made 8 years old.
Wow.
So she's like me. She's a breakfast person. So she got to eat at IHOP at special request, a little bit of strawberry topping on her pancakes. But other than IHOP, that, man, IHOP, man, you know, we IHOP ballers. We go in there and we tip big, baby. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Absolutely horrendous.
Yeah. I have no new news to report except everything is good and everybody's healthy, no GI issues. So let's get to
wait,
the topics.
Wait, your kids survived? They survived the whole being alone with dad for a couple days?
Who would have thought that they'd actually still be alive after my wife took 4 days to go on a business trip? The kids were good and they had fun, so they're still here.
So I guess the real question is who came over to help you?
We have help that comes over at our next door neighbor. She comes over at night. Shout out to Ms. Dixon because she's awesome. And she comes over for about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. But she does that every day, whether my wife is here or not. But on the weekends, it was just me because that's what dads do. Dads don't babysit.
Shameful.
They don't babysit.
Help. Get help to take care of your kids.
I know, right? It's a shame when you get help that comes to your house instead of help that lives with you, right, bro?
I plead the fifth.
Exactly. So... So look, real quick, we received such a phenomenal response to episode 26 with Dr. DJ Sims, so we wanted to continue that momentum tonight with Mr. Jamar Dupas. He is the sole voice that you hear on the Get Your Money Right podcast. It is a breadth of information about money management, and it's in plain language. It is easy to understand, and he does it with a flair and a soul that only he can do. So, gentlemen, why don't one of you introduce Mr. Jamar, and then let's get right to it. And we'll get his introduction, his bio, and everything.
So, yeah, I'll introduce Jamar. So, Jamar is from the great HCBU in the words of Kellyanne Conway.
Shout out to Kellyanne.
Kellyanne, thank you. Prairie View A&M University, another one of the homies from way back. Also a PCI member.
Pretty
soon. Pre-Medical Concepts Institute, biology major. Who we met, I think at our freshman year, his sophomore year. But, you know, he's been doing some great work with his podcast. He's kind of like our big brother in the podcast world. He started like a few months before us and has given us some of the games. We appreciate that a lot. I know my wife never listens to podcasts. You know, she listens to ours when she can, but she rarely listens to any podcasts. And I remember I caught her listening to Jamar's a couple times. So I know it's a great podcast. He's doing wonderful work. So we're happy to have Jamar here with us to help us talk to our community about money, good financial habits, financial wellness, as you may say.
Right. So Jamar, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, where are you at? Family life, what you do for a living, and then we'll get into the actual podcast itself, okay?
First, let me say thank you for having me on here, number one. Number two, I'm real nervous because – Dr. J came on his last episode and knocked it out the park. She just killed it. So I'm going to go ahead and plug, if you don't feel like listening to this, go back and listen to episode 26. If you're not feeling good, go listen to episode 26, man, because she killed it. So I'm feeling a little bit nervous about that. But shout out to her because she was a PCI. She was a PCI grad, and I remember her. She'd been upperclassman when I was there, too. And she was one of the, I even was looking into going through the whole naturopath deal too. So it's it was nice to hear her on the podcast lay out all that stuff. But anyway, again, my name is Jamar Dupas. I'm here in Houston, Texas. I got a wife. I got a few kids. You know, I'm a firefighter paramedic here for the city. And like you said, I got my podcast, the Get Your Money Right podcast. And I just, other than that, I live life and do what I want to do whenever I can do it. And see how I can make a difference somehow.
So listen, as Curtis said, this is all part of our wellness series. So we've covered mental health, physical health, we covered alternative medicine, and you represent something that a lot of people are sort of afraid to discuss in their relationships, or even face head on in their own lives, which is financial wellness and financial responsibility. So I guess my first question is how did you come up with the idea to develop the podcast, right? And then how did you have the confidence to actually tell other people how to manage their money? Because, I mean, that's usually the most important thing we have other than family, right? So you actually had the audacity to go out and advise people on how to handle their money, and you've done very, very well doing it.
Yeah, so it all started because I had friends of ours ask us, like, okay, you ain't making a lot of money, which I don't, right? I'm a public servant, right? So it's like, you're not making a lot of money. You got a wife that stays at home. You got three kids. We got number four on the way. We own a home in a neighborhood that, you know, house values are above average,
right?
And we got a couple of cars. We still vacate. We still go out. We still have a good time. So it's like, well, how are you doing that, right? So I've had several people come and ask me about it. And me and my wife, we looked up one day, we realized that we don't fight about money anymore. And it was just like, this is crazy. And it was like, we should probably tell people about this. And so that's kind of was the, you know, and then I started getting into podcasts. So that was kind of the genesis of everything. Mm-hmm. So as far as what gave me like the confidence, I didn't have any confidence. Right. I just started talking and I was like, I'm going to try this thing and see if anybody listens. And then people start listening, and then, you know, and I'm not even like literally even really giving advice because I don't really have any credentials. I'm just a regular cat that got tired of being broke, got tired of fighting with my wife over money, got tired of wondering where it went, got tired of being, you know, just being stressed about it. Y'all know me as I got a scientific mind. I like to research things. So when things ain't going right, I try to get in and figure out how I can fix it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I got in the whole finance thing anyway.
So, I mean, you brought up one point. We're talking about confidence, but I feel like one of the difficult things that people have in marriage is actually opening up and discussing. And I think in the African-American community, you know, the men, the breadwinner, like we don't feel like we have to discuss these decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how do you get to the point where you can actually be open and candid about what you want with your wife and then as well with the listeners?
Well, anyway, before you answer that, to Mike's point, I think people are almost willing to talk about like their sexual history than they are their financial history. Right. And so, now continue with Mike's comment.
Yeah, that's dead. That's dead on. Like most people, they'll share their bed, their bodies, their children, their wills. They'll share everything. But when it comes to money, it's a real sensitive issue. And I think it goes way back to our history of, you know, not, you know, our parents, at least my parents, didn't talk to us about it. Right. And if we brought up money, you got scolded, like, you know, and everything was just, we can't afford it. Ain't none of your business. You get a job, you get out this house, then you can talk about money. Right. You know, so we were always kind of pushed away from it. But for me, I got clear a long time ago of trying to figure out what's important to me in my life. Right. And early on in our marriage, we were both working and we were working long hours and I would come home. My wife would go to work. You know, I go to work. My wife would come home and I'm looking down the road. It's like, look, this ain't going to work, right? So I'm always looking at, you know, what's going to affect my future, my family's future. And so then we start having children. And she wanted to be home with the babies after she was pregnant with the second child, because she was trying to breastfeed, and women who's trying to go back to work, they can relate to this. A lot of workplaces don't really offer a very comfortable place for you to pump if you're trying to breastfeed and things like that. And she didn't want to leave her children at daycare, right? But we needed, quote unquote, needed the money. And it got to the point to where, okay, well, if this is that important to us, then we got to figure this thing out. So we're going to lose an income. Well, we got to figure out how to make it work on one income. And that's when we really started paying real tight attention to things, because we looked up and said, look, we're paying all this money and to credit card debt, to student loans, to this and that. Because before that, we were doing okay. We were making, which I see a lot of times now, is a lot of people are comfortable. And they're comfortably uncomfortable, so they don't really pay much attention to their money, because if it ain't broke, you know, and if you can get by with it by avoiding it, we usually do that as a whole.
Yeah. I completely agree. Now, just asking you some common sense questions. What is your number one money tip?
Number one money tip, man, is to first of all just pay attention, right? So the thing that, and I'll tell you what people have talked to me after they've gone through the boot camps, I've sat down with them one-on-one, some paradigm shifts that they've gone through, is going from me working for money to asking yourself, what do I want my money to do for me? And that one question alone, when it comes to all your financial decisions, will guide you. Because most people, if you listen to this, you got a smartphone, you listen to podcasts, you woke, you know what I'm saying? If you listen to University of College, you woke, right? So you're a smart individual. So a lot of times just that right question can lead you down your own path, because personal finance is personal. So,
yeah, of course.
But if you can get that part, what do I want my money to do for me? That simple question, I find, or what people are telling me, is the thing that changes things for them.
Right. I think the thing that's the most impressive about what you're doing, in my opinion, is the fact, I've used the term audacity earlier, and I hope that didn't come across as offensive. That's not how I meant it. I wanted to.
No.
I think it's incredible that somebody believed that they could do it and then went and did it. And so as an extension of that, now you're doing these boot camps, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the boot camps as well.
So the boot camps is basically the next evolution of the podcast. So the podcast, I talk a lot about concepts. I talk a lot about ideas. I try to bring to people's attention what's out there, what big banks and broke people have told us all our lives versus what the truth is, right? Just want to make it okay to pay attention to things that we need to talk about when it comes to money. So the boot camps is basically these workshops, basically, and we just teach our system of how we manage money in our household. So a lot of times people just don't have a system of, you know, they just kind of spend money, you know, willy nilly, and they don't really have a system. And so that's kind of what we do at the boot camps.
So you do one-on-one personal assessments, correct?
Yeah, I did a lot of that last year. I'm trying to get away from it. One, because my time is really valuable, and trying to help people with their money, I don't want to be charging people a ton of, you know what I mean? I'm in this weird place where I don't want to charge people, but I don't want to be away from my family either.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, it costs money to have the website I have and hosting the podcast and things like that. So all this is coming out of my pocket. And so my wife be looking at me sideways like, look, you know, I know you want to save the world and all, but, you know, it's, you know, like my website by itself is $150 a month. Right. Like, so it's, you know, it's. Basically, I started doing these small group boot camps to kind of do one to a few, you know, try to do. It's a little bit better than one-on-one, because I can get like maybe 10 couples in there at a time, and we can talk about subjects instead of me just sitting down with one person for an hour or 2 hours. And then, you know, it's just, it takes a lot of time. I can only help so many people doing one-on-one.
The boot camps are virtual or they're in person?
They're all virtual.
Okay. So is there any overall information you want people to know about the services you provide, or in general? Is there anything they should know about money management?
Oh, man, there's a lot of things you should know about money management.
Well, just general, yeah.
So I can talk about this for days, right? So I've had a podcast where it's just me on there mumbling for almost 50 episodes, right? But more than money management, people need distraction management. So it's not that you don't necessarily know exactly what to do with your money. It's just we get distracted a lot. One of the reasons why I decided to do the podcast, because I'm black, right? And I love the black community. And a lot of times, I'll take this. I read an article that we have spending power of $1.5 trillion or something like that. If you took all the black Americans in this country and you put our spending power together, we'd be like the ninth largest country in the world or something like that, right? And there was this lady by the name of Maggie Anderson. She wrote this book called Our Black Year, where she tried to go around and just shop and do business with black-owned businesses, right? And of course, she had difficulty doing that because, you know, there's certain things we don't control, like infrastructure, like water, lights, things like that. But she's talked about it. But anyway, she's gone on and done a ton of research. And that $1.5 trillion is we only spend 2% of that within black-owned businesses, right?
Wow.
And crazy. Right. And if we just took it from 2% to 5%, we can create a million jobs for black people, right? And I've gotten flack talking about that, because my podcast is very diverse. So, and I got diverse friends. And I even got flack about kind of, you know, the whole racist thing. They try to pull that race card on you. But my deal is like this. Unemployment for black people in the 1960s was double the general population. Today, unemployment in the black community is still double the general population, right? So there is a problem. And the truth of the matter is, regardless of how you cut it, black-owned businesses hire black people, right? So when you think about a lot of our own struggles when it comes to finances and comes to even generating income to manage, you know, for me, I feel like we need to start there. But it's difficult for us to start there if we're so distracted with the middle class hustle, with the rat race, with we're not paying attention to our dollars in itself. So I'm just trying to help people pay a little bit more attention to their dollars so they can spend it more purposely. I don't want anybody to be cheap. I don't want anybody to be frugal. I don't even want you to cut back. I'm not one of those people that thinks you need the coupon, right? I focus on things that matter the most. Like, don't get temporary savings, get permanent savings, right? It's not about frugality, it's about purpose. If you give your dollars purpose, then the stuff that don't matter to you will automatically leave your life. Right? So every time I spend a dollar, right, my dollar has to do something for me. So it has to bring me value. So I don't buy anything that doesn't bring me value. Just that simple mindset just completely changes. So people ask me, well, do I need to cut the cable? I don't know. Does cable bring value to you? Right. I spend big money on a lot of things. So I'm not the cheap person. I got a Mac computer. We got big screen TVs. My wife bought this. Parents would know this thing called Mamaroo. It's like this electronic baby rocker thing that you control it with your phone. We have that, right? So it's not like I don't spend any money. It's just when I do spend money, I do it on purpose with the purpose. And we try to kind of curate our purchases and not necessarily just concentrate on cutting back and scrimping and saving, things like that.
So you basically have taken the impulse out of buying, right? People always talk about impulse purchases. You're taking it away.
Right. Yeah, so we have a certain amount of money for impulses, right? So, like, give you an example. One of the things that we stop doing and one of the things we teach people to do, and it's a very simple concept. You've heard the concept of don't count your chickens before they hatch, right? But the problem is we've heard that, but we don't necessarily apply it. Every week, every 2 weeks when people get paid or every month when they go to do their quote-unquote budget, they count their chickens before they hatch. So they try to spend money on paper, even when they try to budget, with money they have not received yet, right? So it's like, oh, I expect to make $5,000 this month, so I'm going to write down my expenses on a piece of paper, and I'm going to try to budget this $5,000 that's supposed to come in this month. But what happens is maybe the check comes up short, maybe you get a little bit more, maybe, you know, things don't necessarily work out. So they try this whole budget thing, and they're like, you know what, this budgeting stuff don't work, right? And then they blame that, and then they just give up, like forget it. Well, one of the things we teach people to do is not to that what you're doing there is not budgeting. We call it fudgeting, right? Mm-hmm. It's forecasting. You're trying to forecast the money that you think is going to come in versus the things that you think you're going to spend your money on. Instead, what you want to do is not budget with your if-come, but budget with your actual income, money that you have on hand. So one of the first things we teach people to do is try to get on last month's income, right? So if I know I got $5,000 for the next month, well, then now I'm allocating my money, right? And I'm not necessarily budgeting. Warren Buffett, for those who don't know, is one of the richest guys in the country, right? One of the greatest investors of all time. And he says the number one skill that all investors should have or should learn is they should learn how to allocate their assets. Well, every dollar that you bring in is an asset, right? So if you're going to be wealthy one day, you might want to start working on allocating your assets now. So those are the kind of things, the perspectives that I just try to bring to the conversation.
Yes, yeah, it's funny because, you know, my whole problem is that I value Louis, Gucci, you know, all these things that yeah. cost a lot of money. You know, like my son, he's 4, and today he went to his favorite restaurant. We went to Papa Do's, right?
Right.
That's my son's favorite restaurant. We spent like $250 just to eat a family yeah. meal.
Because he told your son, he Kurt. Told you that's his favorite. That's what? His favorite. He told you that.
Yeah, he's 4.
How old is your son, Kurt?
He's 4. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't call it Papa Do's. He calls it the lobster restaurant. He knows the lobsters are there.
It's even worse. That is worse.
Point is this. Point is they know it's difficult, you know, to move to a allocation system, you know. Right. I think that's one of the hardest things you can do.
It's difficult because you haven't been taught how to.
Right.
Right. So your job, what you do as a freaking cardiologist is difficult. But you've been through training. Who here has received any training? Who listening to my voice has received any training on how to manage your money? You know what I mean? And that's what I find. Nobody's told us anything about this stuff. Right. It's just like you started making money and it's like, all right, good luck. Have a good time. You know what I mean? Like we just focus
and
on that.
I'm having a good time.
And you're having a good time. Right? But here's the deal. There are ways for you to do your good time. So one of the things that we do, and I'll just throw this out real quick. When we have a simple framework, how we manage our money. So every time a dollar comes in, no matter how much it is, we know exactly what we're going to do with our money because we don't necessarily do things in numbers, but we do them in percentages. Right. So we call them our buckets. So every time a dollar comes in our house, we're tithers, right? So 10% of every dollar that comes in a house goes to tithing and giving. We feed the hungry, we clothe the naked, things like that, right? The next 10%, and we call that the giving bucket. The next 10% that comes in our house, it goes to what we call our wealth building bucket, right? So this is money that we use to make more money, right? And that's all it's used for. It's not used for anything else. You can never spend it. But the next bucket we do this for savings for spending, right? We call it our big savings bucket. So if we need to get a car one day, if we need to get a refrigerator, a couch, we put money in this bucket every single time, right? So whatever we need to save money to spend for, that's what we do. The next bucket we use, and this all is automatic when it comes in. We don't even think about it. We do our budgeting or our allocating once a month, and we never even think about money the rest of the month. But the next bucket that we use, we call the getting better bucket, right? So for us, our marriage is important to us. So we use money in that to go on marriage retreats, to read books, to take classes, to take courses, because I truly believe your income will only grow to the extent that you do, right? So if the money that you're making today is what your brain and your mind and your skill set will allow you to make, you want to make more money, you got to get more skills. You got to get more thoughts. You got to get more ideas. That's what this getting better bucket is about. And then we have what we call the baller bucket. This is the bucket that you would love, right? So 10% of my money. Yeah. The 10% of this is just goes towards stuff that makes us feel like ballers, right? Whatever it is. If we go with you to go to Papa Do's and hang out with your 4-year-old and try to live it up on his level, you know what I'm saying? We reach out our baller bucket and we go do that. You know, and we have certain rules like the baller bucket. We have to spend it in 30 days. So it gives us something to go look for, an exciting thing for me and my wife to kind of, OK, we got this money. We got to figure out a way to spend this and have a good time with it. Right. And then the other 50% of our money goes towards our basic lifestyle, our mortgage, our, you know, food, you know, things like that. And it wasn't always like this, right? So when we first started, it was 96%, 1, 1, 1, 1, right? So we were given 1%. We had 1% in a baller bucket. We had 1% of savings because all of our money was going towards bills. And so we determined that these buckets were the most important things to us. So now our money got purpose. So when it was time to decide whether or not we wanted to cut the cable or not, it wasn't even a thought process, because wealth building is more important to us than paying Comcast $220 a month for our cable bill, which we were doing. Right. So it wasn't necessarily, oh, I need to try to cut and coupon and cut back, but I need to make room for the things that's most important to me in my life. And the hardest part, once you know these things, is keeping that on the forefront of your mind. And that's kind of the things that we kind of help people do.
They do.
So that was amazing.
Yeah, that's an amazing that's an amazing
but look,
system.
But look, and we said this last week, don't give them no more. They need to listen to the podcast. They need to sign up for the boot camp.
No, one more question.
Here's my deal. Here's my thought process on this, right? And y'all know this, right? We all got friends, right? It don't matter. I can give people every single secret I could possibly know on this podcast right now, and they still may not do it.
True.
Right. So I don't think we gain by holding back. Right. Just give. And those people who want to step up, like if you hear this and you go, man, OK, that's good, and you want to know more, then you're going to reach out anyway. But whatever y'all want to talk about, I'm here, man. Let's give it to them.
Well, look, hold on one second. So, Kurt, you got a question?
Yeah. Well, another question.
Go ahead.
So let's talk about some other nitty gritty things, because to me, the devil's in the details. So I think we talked about this one time before in the podcast, and that was, how do you split your accounts between you and your wife?
Yeah.
So how did you and your wife do the whole joint account, single account? You know, everybody keeps their own. How do you do it?
Right. So when we first started, it was kind of like individual accounts, right? Like most people, I think. And that was okay. But one of the things I found out, the problem with the individual account is the unknowns, and you kind of have this, when you have that air of unknown, I don't know how much that person is making, or I don't know how much money that person has, especially in a marriage, right? It can open up doors for like resentment and distrust and financial infidelity and things like that, which is, as y'all probably know, is one of the most, you know, prevalent reasons why people get divorced. Right. So basically what we do, and even what we teach, and you can do what you want to, right? Because everybody's marriage is their own marriage. But we try to do the best of both worlds. So every dollar that comes in the house comes in the house. There is no his money. There is no her money when the money comes in. Right. It's our money. We made this. We made that. And we had to get to that point because my wife is a career woman. She's a degreed woman. She grew up to be an independent, strong black woman. So her going home to be with the children was very difficult transition. In fact, we started off part-time first. She kind of just cut back hours, and then we kind of progressively moved to that because it was something that she had to kind of deal with personally. Even I had to deal with it because I've always believed that, you know, your better half or your other half is supposed to come in and pull weight and yada, yada, yada. So it was difficult things we had to go through. But we had to do it this way for her to feel comfortable, right? For us to get comfortable, for her to be at home. And now she's been at home with our children for 5 years, and I don't think there is no turning back at this point. But every dollar that comes in the house comes in the house, right? And we sit down and we allocate together, right? Just like I talked about those buckets. And those buckets help us allocate. Now, when we get to our lifestyle bucket, that's when we assign each other. We have our own money, and then we split that money. And then with that, you have your own debit card or credit cards and things like that. So we bring everything to the table up front, allocate, decide what we want to do together. How do we want our money to help us? How do we want our money to work for us? And then we split up our own personal money to do whatever you want to do with it, because nobody wants to be asking nobody else for money. Right. Can I do this? Can I afford that? And that, absolutely, to me, it irritated me more than anything. I hate it when my wife would ask me, can we afford that? Don't ask me. I don't know. You know, that used to irritate the mess out of me. But now we don't, because we're not checking our checking account to see if we can afford things. The money's been allocated. The money's sitting in certain places. So you just look at it and say, OK, yeah, we can get it. Boom.
Excellent.
Yeah. So in my case, because I'm a physician and obviously it took me forever to accumulate, you know, all my training, it was kind of forced upon me because my wife finished her education before I did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of at the beginning of our marriage, she made a lot more money than I did. And I grew up in a system kind of like yours where all the money comes into the house. We're on the same team. We're moving toward the same objectives. So we need to have a unified purpose with how we manage our money. And my wife is kind of like yours, you know, career woman and stuff like that. And actually, that was kind of the thing that was most difficult for us. People talk about, like, you know, moving into the house when you get married and having mm-hmm. kids and stuff like that. But people never really talk about how difficult it is to get on the same page with your spouse, especially when you're in a house where no one talks to you about how to manage money, or if no one has ever been open with how you communicate about money.
Right.
And getting on the same page and just how to talk about money is actually a very difficult thing to do. Because sometimes you just can't agree on what's important, right? I can be like, I think being debt-free is important. And someone else would be like, no, I want experiences and I think those are important. And you kind of have to figure out how you can work to that end. so my wife is also staying at home to take care of our kids because that's something she always wanted to do. When we were a financial means, she wanted to spend time with our kids at home. And, you know, we had to sit down and budget to figure out how we're going to make that work. But yeah, I'm kind of like you. We're the one account. She don't really ask me for nothing unless it's huge, you know, yep. Trump huge. Otherwise, yep. we kind of know that. Yeah, exactly. We know that we're not trying to, you know, stunt on nobody. We're just trying to get the stuff we need so we can live how we want.
Yeah, man, that's important, and even like just to have goals, right? Like, to, you know, you got an idea of where you want your family or what you want your life to look like, where you want your family to go. Then those things are the most important things, and then your money works around that, right? Like, even when we bought our house, our lifestyle was the most important thing. It wasn't how much house can we afford. It was, you know, what lifestyle do we want? So what's the location we want to be in? Do we want to get a huge mortgage or do we want to not get such a huge mortgage so we can go out to the shows and the ballets? My wife likes the arts, so we can have, you know, freed up capital so we can be, you know, anti-fragile when it comes to our finances. So if things happen that we can do things that we really want, still do things that we need to do without, you know, taking on great hardship and all that, all our financial decisions are wrapped around what we want our life to look like.
Yeah. I think it's funny because, you know, my dad talked to me about money, my dad and my mother. You know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, as everybody knows, my wife she's a practicing physician. I'm still in training, so she makes significant more money than I do. But I remember having conversations with my dad about, you know, how to manage money, how to budget things, and how to, you know, plan for the future. You know, sitting down with him as he picks stocks to, you know, invest in and things of that nature. I think just like you said, that education is so important because, you know, my wife makes majority of the money. I kind of pay the bills, but we make financial decisions together. And it's so much easier when y'all are on the same page, when you're moving in the same direction, when you have the same goals. In my personal opinion, you got to make those things clear before you even get married. You know, I joke a lot about stunting and all that stuff. Well, me and my wife are actually pretty conservative in what we buy. And I think that we know where we want to go. And I think that you just have to work towards that goal in order to get there. And, you know, that's some days that takes a lot of sacrifice. You know, every once in a while you can go to Papa Do's and spend big. But for the most part, you got to stay consistent and, you know, stay true to what your goals were when you first started, sat down and talked about them.
Yeah, and I'm a real big fan of creating systems, right? A lot of the engineer on here knows about systems and things like that. And, you know, system stands for save yourself some time, energy, and money. And one of the issues that we have with our finances is we have to make too many financial decisions throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month. And we get tired. They call it decision fatigue. I call it financial decision fatigue, right? If you've ever had to plan a wedding, plan a party, things like that, you know, by the time the end of it, end of the planning, you're like, whatever, just yeah. Just get that. Yeah, because I'm tired of making decisions. And we do that with our finances. So some, if you have to make so many financial decisions, what will happen is you will end up making bad decisions, right? So we don't make decisions really, but like early on in the month, like we'll do, like I said, we do it once a month. So we sit down, we do our allocations, and all the bills are done on autopilot. So that's taken care of, right? So I'm not thinking about bills the rest of the month, right? And as far as personal money, I just have it in my pocket or have it on my card or whatever the case may be. And then that way I get, if I want it, I get it. And if I don't, then I don't. But I'm not stuck making too many decisions over and over and over throughout the month when it comes to my finances. And that wears people out. You already got enough decisions to make as it is. You got to get up. You got to go to work. You got to get the kids. You got to feed them. You got to, you know, yada, yada, yada. Money is one of those things that I feel like people can get out of the way and focus on the thing that's, things that are most important to them. If you've got a basic system, if you can just do that early on, do it once or maybe twice. Most, not everybody can do it once like we do it now. We gradually went to that, right? We would do it every time we would get paid, and then we got better and better and better. But if you could just do that, you just don't even worry about it. Like that money that goes to the wealth building bucket, it comes in, it's gone. It's not even a temptation anymore because I don't even worry about it no more.
So Jamar, before we get to the topics at hand for the evening, tell everybody, you know, just in case there are other programs out there or listeners or, you know, clients that might want to have you come speak, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, just my website, yourmoneyright.com. Again, that's yourmoneyright.com. And I'm the host of the Get Your Money Right podcast. You can find it pretty much wherever any podcast is done. And you can sign up. Matter of fact, I think this goes out. If you catch this before the next boot camp, we got a boot camp coming up this weekend, and they're inexpensive, but it's intensive. You're going to come out with a system for you, and you get to ask whatever questions you want. You actually get to peek in and look into our own finances and see how we do things, which is most people's favorite part because they get all of my business. but yeah, if you want to know more about what we do and how we do it, the podcast, and then just hit me up. All my contact information is at the website, yourmoneyright.com.
Excellent. Yeah, man, and what we'll also do is we'll make sure we put that information in the show notes so that all the visitors that download the podcast, our podcast, can actually get that information as well.
Yeah, and we want to say thank you for talking about an issue in the Black community that's kind of taboo.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
when you look at the Black community, you know I made some foolish decisions when I was in med school. I'm not going to lie. Like I said on your podcast when we were on there a couple days ago. Thanks for having us on, by the way.
It was a lot of fun. Listen
to Jamar's podcast. We were on there a few weeks ago. But, you know, money burns a hole in my pocket. I'm not going to lie about that. So I got about, 13, 14 pairs of Jordans upstairs. I think Vern has quite a few upstairs, too, in his bedroom. So, you know, I'm a spender. But I'm slowly learning how not to spend things. And I think my habits come from, you know, my parents being pretty well-to-do. And me not really ever, you know, I heard my dad talk about money and how to manage money. But I never had to worry about anything. I was like, hey, Dad, can I borrow $100 to go to the store? He's like, cool, here you go.
You know, let me say, we're all spenders, right? You've heard that whole deal's like some of us are savers, some of us are spenders. We're all spenders. The thing is, the savers aren't savers. They're just afraid, right? And when you give the saver the security that they need, they spend, right?
Maybe so.
We're all spenders. You just gotta give yourself permission to spend, right? Because you're going to spend anyway. It's like if you try to go on a diet, right? And you don't eat anything with any sugar in it, right? And somebody invites you to an ice cream party. You get to the ice cream party and you go nuts, right? You eat everything up in the building. And that's what we do with our money. We try to save money. We try to scrimp back and we try to cut back. And then all of a sudden, one day we say, forget it. And we just spend on a big ticket item, right? But you felt like he was doing something those few months. And I found that with me and with relationships, I tried that whole don't spend any money deal. Almost lost my wife. Not literally, but you know what I mean? We weren't on the verge of divorce or anything. But, you know, my wife likes things. I like things. And we work hard for our money. Take care of yourself and get you a system in place. And then you'll be happy. But you have guilt-free spending.
Yeah.
And that right there is the best type. So you can get as many Jordans as you want if it fits in your game plan.
Exactly. Yeah, I just think it's a great subject that, you know, we all can use more information on.
To the listeners, Jamar has been nice enough to stick around for the remainder of the show. You know, sometimes we have guests that leave and then we have guests to stay. So Jamar's going to stay. He's going to kind of give us his opinions on some of these taboo subjects, such as our resident dumpster fire president. And we'll see what he has to say about that. So first out the gate, Michael, give us the bullet points for President Trump's first address to Congress that aired last night.
Well, I mean, so the general take-home point is that I think universally people thought he did well. The tone was much more appropriate. You know, they tend to say that there's a general plan that you have to have when you give these type of speeches, and he just stayed to the plan. He articulated his points. He said things like we need to unify, bring America together. He did the formula that he needed for success. You know, different people have, you know, dissected the speech depending on your particular affiliation and your party. But he did talk about things that were directly geared toward his base, you know, America first type topics. And then he talked about some things that would be more positive areas that progressive leaning people would be have a more affinity to.
Yeah. I mean, I take pride. I do mean absolute pride and joy in disagreeing with Mike. It's kind of my highlight of the week. But in this particular case, I'm going to agree with Mike. You know, I've been probably the strongest opponent of Trump's presidency, I should say, on this show. But last night, he did something that scared me. He sounded like a president. Now, you can say whatever you want to say about his delivery. Oh, he has such a low bar for him. That's all true, right? The man went out there, he read from a teleprompter, and he sounded sane. But hey, that's a massive step up for him. That is a massive step in the right direction. And it's a massive step in the right direction for people who really do care about this kind of thing. And that's the Republican Party. They're looking for a reason to keep this man in office, to keep from impeaching this man, to say, hey, we can support this man. And he keeps picking the right Supreme Court nominees. He keeps talking about the health care reform that they like. And hey, that's great for them. You know, that gives them less leverage when it comes to getting rid of him and pushing Mike Pence in. So to me, yesterday, he did a great job of just being presidential, step in the right direction. Now, I will say, you know, he also put a lot of red meat in there for the progressives, like Mike said. I mean, talking about infrastructure, that's absolutely a Democratic deal. Republicans don't want to spend money on infrastructure. You know, he talked about legalization for immigrants before he got to his speech. Again, that is something that Republicans don't really want to talk about. He talked about giving a tax credit for people who couldn't afford health care. Republicans don't want to give people tax credits. That's not in their vocabulary. So in my personal opinion, he talked about a lot of common sense things that both sides could, you know, kind of sit down and come together on and maybe move the country forward. We'll see.
Go ahead, Jamar.
Yeah, I'm... for me, it sounded orchestrated. It didn't sound like him. It sounded like speech writers. I will say that it definitely sounded better. The rhetoric was definitely better. The issue that I have with it from a financial perspective, it's going to take him 6 presidential terms and about $3 trillion to pull all that stuff off. From infrastructure to paid family leave to this quote unquote healthcare, you know, repeal and replace thing he's talking about, to these trade wars he's trying to get into, to borderline isolationism, investing more in the military, investing more in our police. These things are big ticket items. These are not inexpensive things. And but I am for tax credits. And I will have to disagree with you on that. The Republicans are very pro tax credit. They're very much pro tax credit. If they can
they're pro tax cuts, not tax credit.
Well, that's
tax
what
credits,
they
tax credits are seen as entitlements that you give to poor people. Tax cuts are different.
Well, it depends on what you're looking at, right? Because tax credits, if you're a business, they get a ton of tax credits, right? So that's how they do their tax cuts on under the table, so to speak, right? But that's the whole tax code deal. We can get in that another time. But other than that, I tell you what, I felt better about his approach and what he was saying. I just don't believe him.
All right, well, I guess I'll play cleanup hitter. So Trump started off the speech by talking about Black History Month. You know, he signed the executive order, but he didn't give the HBCU presidents time to speak in the executive order. In fact, he only met with them reportedly for about 10 minutes. He talked about anti-Semitism in the speech last night, but he only talked about anti-Semitism in the last week or so when these incidences have been rising steadily for the past couple of weeks. He talked about affordable child care, but reportedly the child care that he's discussing is only going to impact people that make at least $100,000 a year, families rather. He talked about promoting clean air and water, but he's also talking about extending drilling and creating more drilling information or drilling situations up north. He talked about women's health, but his current Medicare and Medicaid secretary wants to end paid maternity leave. All right, so I agree more so with Jamar that a lot of all these things that he's talking about don't seem to go together. He's saying one thing in his speeches, but then the people he's nominating for his cabinet or the stuff that he's saying outside of that one speech don't really go with what he's talking about. And I also think it's important, Kurt mentioned this earlier, probably because he knew I was going to say it. He said that, yeah, the bar is low, but, you know, as long as he can keep doing that thing, doing these types of things, he'll be there for, he'll get reelected for another term. And, you know, perhaps that's true, but the bar of the most important person in the world shouldn't be so low that all you have to do is show up to work and read a speech. And by the way, the speech is things he's been saying for the last couple weeks anyway, so it's not like he brought out new material. He sort of expounded upon a lot of the things he's been saying. So I don't think he saved the world and created some new presidential image. I just think he read a speech, and he read it better than he had in the past. He also read a speech at his inauguration.
So a few rebuttals. One, we don't have paid maternity leave in America. One. Two, you can talk about drilling up north and places like that and still talk about having clean air in the places where we live.
It doesn't promote right? it, is all I'm saying.
Those aren't mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And three, he did talk about a lot of things he hadn't talked about before. Now, you know, the anti-Semitism, that was something new. He had been ignoring that in the past. He addressed it a couple times, but he came out and talked about it directly. He also had been talking bad about the generals and other people who were involved in that raid that went wrong overseas, and he brought the spouse on, and he apologized basically for what happened to her husband and said he was a hero and, you know, said we will always be there for her. That was a new approach for him on that particular subject. I mean, he was trying to blame everybody else.
Well, the father of the fallen soldier didn't show up, but the wife did, so I don't really know how much credence I lend to the fact that the wife showed up.
Hey, man, you can say what you want to say, but that moment was like one of the nicest moments they've had on doing a presidential address in a long time.
Yeah, because he's a monster all the time. So yeah, it looked like a nice moment. When you have no heart and soul, and then you do something human, of course you look like it's a great moment.
Hey, all I'm saying is that people were talking about that moment, man.
God, I agree with you guys. But we have to at least say, okay, I don't want to be the guy that's just bashing Trump just to bash him. But again, you cannot just simply show up to work, and that's just doing good job. Like, good job, son. You showed up today. It's more than
true. He didn't do a great job.
No, I'll give him credit for not messing up on a speech and staying and reading only what's in the box. I'll give him credit for that.
He hadn't done that before.
He has done it before. He did it at his inauguration address. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. He didn't stick on message. He jumped around a lot.
Man, okay. So just for the record, I want to be... Yes, sir. Yeah.
So that's a very harsh assessment, calling him a monster with no soul. But what I would like to
articulate... I'm sorry, you disagree with that?
I disagree with that too, but go ahead, Mike.
Y'all get back to what we're talking about. Y'all are caping for Donald Trump. Go ahead, Mike.
No, we're caping for just humanity and general respect. But
he has no respect for anybody.
Hold on. Let me get what I'm saying. So, you know, we criticize President Obama for not quote unquote.
Time out. You criticize President Obama.
Exactly.
Don't put me in that category.
Yeah. That was you.
All
right.
That's a bridge too far, brother. Bridge too far.
I know this. Me and other people have criticized President Barack Obama for not being firm enough when he comes to standing up for African-American issues, right? It's something that is very well known. Okay. So with Trump, one of the things we always talk about is the things he say he at least attempts to try to execute. For him to come out and articulate things that African Americans have concerns about, so he said education is the civil rights issue of our time. This is the truth. He comes out and he signs executive order trying to make a priority of funding HBCUs.
If he really thought that education was civil rights issue of our time, would he hire Betsy DeVos to be nominate her?
That's a good point, Vern. That does not; those two do not go together.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, no. So hold on. I may not agree with this point.
What are you talking about?
But if he's saying no, I'm not talking about the point I'm having about his nomination for Betsy DeVos and the way they plan to improve education. I may not agree with their mechanism of trying to improve education. That doesn't mean they don't think that's a right way to approach it, right? These are two different things.
That's true.
Okay. So he's saying that he thinks education for all is important, and he has this on the agenda. And he has proven that this is on the agenda. And he has articulated it in his state speech. He talks about all these things that are progressive-leaning things, right? We just talked about paid maternity leave. We just talked about, basically making it to where women have access to health care. We talked about clean air and water. Those aren't mutually exclusive. You can, pump oil, because our whole economy has been on coal and oil, and the energy that we use to build the batteries, to build the wind farms, all of this is based on coal and stuff you pump out the ground. So you can use that as the backbone of your energy system while at the same time trying to develop clean energy. Like, those two aren't mutually exclusive. And all I'm saying is, for someone who came out and has been very divisive, derogatory, insulting, he came out and he said things that people who are progressive can at least be like, all right, if he's willing to push these things, maybe I can work with
him. The problem, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, and which is a huge cry from, say, a week ago, when literally there's almost nothing he could have said that they'd have been like, that's something we could even entertain.
But therein is the problem with what you're saying, right? Just a week ago, he was saying the exact opposite, and that's the problem, right?
No.
One speech does not a president make, okay?
It doesn't. He was not saying the opposite, Vern. I agree with you. Look, we have to wait and see what he does. You're right.
That's exactly.
Him making a speech does not mean he's going to be the next Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, my personal opinion, the next Barack Obama. I agree. It's all the proof is in the pudding. So we'll see what the man does over the next few months. Now, I will say his Twitter account's gone pretty quiet lately. He hasn't attacked anybody. I think they took his phone from him. He's starting to realize, like you said last week.
It's been a week, man.
Or 2 weeks ago, that presidenting's hard.
Yes.
And he can't do it like he runs Celebrity Apprentice. So he's starting to take the necessary steps to be presidential. The step he took yesterday was a big step. Look, man, if you've been in your job for 3 whole weeks and you've been messing up the entire time, let you come to work and not burn the fries one time. Your boss is going to be pleased with you.
But that cat
didn't burn the fries today.
But exactly what they'll say is, let's see what he does tomorrow. So I agree with you. You're right. Let's see what he continues to do. But let's not act like we haven't had the last 18 months of the things he's been saying. Yeah. That's my point.
We're not out here crying and talking about,
Doc,
he proved he was the president of the United States.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what Mike is saying. Because Mike puts on his cape for Donald. Mike puts on his cape for Donald Trump regularly each week. First of all,
Mike stands up for reason.
This
is very reasonable. But for the other thing, I would like to highlight is the chaos that we consider Trump's initial month and a half or 2 months, I guess now at this point, to be. This is very similar to what President Bill Clinton had when he came in, right? They thought he was very chaotic. He had trouble appointing his cabinet. Like, everybody thought he was going to be an absolute abject failure. And I don't know, this is true.
But Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, wasn't he?
No. No one. So this is the thing. We're talking about two different things. So Bill
I'm talking Clinton about, I'm talking about competence. Outside. I'm talking about competence. That's all I'm talking about.
So this is the thing. So we can say Donald Trump is dumb all we want. But the man was smart enough to get elected. The man was smart enough to surround himself with people who could get him elected. He was smart enough to go against the grain. He literally did everything counter to what the strategist suggested. And you know what the person who listened to the strategist did? She went home. Yeah. So all I'm saying is,
look, we're not saying he's dumb. We're just saying that he executes poorly. That he hasn't been. He's been a divisive character. We're not saying he's dumb.
Well, no. So that's why I brought up Bill Clinton. Right? Bill Clinton ran as an outsider. He brought all the people from Arkansas who were outside D.C., and when he got here, he didn't know what the hell to do, And as a consequence of that, it was very chaotic. He had trouble getting stuff basically in the legislative agenda. He had trouble appointing his cabinet. I'm saying that, you know, when Donald Trump came in and looked reasonable, that's why a lot of people are like, okay.
There's a difference between appointing a cabinet members and hiring Sean Spicer, who's a disaster. There's a difference between having lots of Washington outsiders who, you know, don't really know what's going on in Washington, and having your spokesman say, or like your head advisor say, we use alternative facts, right? Like Trump has said, let's not diminish the terribleness of his first like 30 days. They were horrible, Mike.
That's what Vernon's been trying to tell y'all.
That's all I was about to say.
No.
I think Kurt understands. I think Kurt understands.
I agree with him. But my point is this, is that when he acts presidential for the first time, we have to give him his props, one. And two, if you actually take away, if you just read his words and you didn't know Donald Trump was giving the speech, let's take Donald Trump away from the speech. Let's say this is some random Republican guy giving this speech. You would raise your eyebrows. Republicans would raise their eyebrows. Because there's lots of things in that speech that Republicans don't believe in. There honestly is. I think that you have to look at, he is actually sitting somewhere in the center. Now he's a nationalist. That's far off somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know,
a lot of his ideas are in the center.
That's always been Trump.
No.
Right?
No.
Trump is a manipulator. Right.
And he knows
how to move people. Right. He understands this country. We have short attention spans. We will forget. Right. He understands how to move large crowds of people. And he knows how to do it well. When I hear pimp talk, I know it from a mile away. Right. So he spoke like it's already been said. All right. He spoke out of both sides of his neck. Right. You can go back and look at all the clips where he was at one point he was pro-choice. All of a sudden he's pro-life, right? He does whatever he needs to do to get the deal done. I've actually read his books, The Art of the Deal, and he'll tell you in that book, right? You want to know how Trump operates? Read The Art of the Deal, right? He will manipulate. He will mirror. He will do all these things to make you real comfortable with him. He will shake you up and catch you off guard. Right. So Trump is not an idiot. He's a tyrant, but he's not an idiot.
But Jamar, I agree with you. I think you're saying exactly what I'm saying. That's why I was so scared yesterday. Right. Because I thought he was incapable of being a big enough adult for an hour and a half to give a speech like he did yesterday. I didn't think he was capable of it. Look, everything in his track record beforehand shows that he was incapable of being an adult. He just couldn't put his phone down long enough. He couldn't, you know, be big enough during a speech or during a campaign rally to forget about all the noise. But he did it yesterday. And that's all I'm saying is that yesterday he pushed away all the noise.
Yeah. And it, to me, it still shows his immaturity. Right. So he's looking up and he's seeing that his approval ratings are down. Right. My children, they act right when I stop paying attention to them, right? These are things that children do, that people do when they want to get back on your good graces. He understands people. He understands the sentiment of this country, and he knows how to manipulate the media. He knows how to the reason why he keeps saying fake news, lies. He understands if he keeps saying it long enough, people are going to believe, and his base already believes it. And now everybody, just because he says it over and over, people are starting to question. Well, I'm reading this article,
but nobody's arguing that point. Like if you ask me and Mike, we're not arguing that point. We agree with
you. Right. I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying don't get lulled to sleep on this.
I'm not lulled to sleep.
Well, this is the part I think is important, right? I think people who are left leaning, they get lost in the personality and stuff like that. And that's the thing that they're criticizing, right? At this point, it all needs to be substantive, right? We need to connect the rhetoric with the policies, right? Forget what he talks about, rhetoric, policy. He can say that it's fake news, but then when you have to acknowledge the leaks and that they're true, then you know, now we have to go back to the things that you said, right? This is stuff that if you're always connecting the dots, then this is a thing that people will actually pay attention to, right? Calling him an idiot doesn't help. Huh?
Except he's not doing that stuff, Michael. That's all I'm saying.
No, that is what the media is doing. The media is getting... The media is trying to grow a backbone, which is what they haven't been doing, right? What they have been catering to is ratings, clicks, things that make money. And at some point, especially when he's attacking the actual substance of being, you know, this part of our democracy, which is an independent media, now people are actually trying to do their jobs. And that's what they should have been doing the whole time. And so what I'm saying is, right, when he's saying fake news, and this is very frustrating because on the right side, people have that slant, and the left side, people have that slant. And so it confuses people because I think everybody has their own agenda. And so the only thing we can really go off of is validation of the facts over time. And so Trump says he wants to put an infrastructure plan in. He wants to build our roads, build our bridges, put people back to work. And when that don't happen, we're going to hold him to account. Vernon looks disgruntled.
I mean, like, it's like I'm in, like, the fucking Twilight Zone or something, man.
Nah, you're missing the point, bro. You're missing the point.
No, okay. You have the look that Kurt should have. I'm just so proud of myself.
If
I shouldn't have that look at all.
If me and Kurt switch places, then that's good. No, he's saying that I look like how you normally look.
like when I say something and Kurt is like...
Exactly. Yeah, but see, I always use substance. My problem with most of Mike's argument is they're substantially wrong, right?
If y'all think that Donald Trump is some amazing person now because he gave a 45-minute speech without cursing or being racist, then y'all are good.
Yeah, so I've been looking at Facebook last couple of days. You know, honestly, I've been busy in the lab, so I haven't had a chance to keep up with this whole HBCU executive order. Mike, what's going on with that?
The executive order just says that HBCUs will be a priority and that the actual governance of it will be put under the executive branch. So they'll be responsible for allocating funds. That's what the order says.
Yeah, what my point is, I don't understand, why should I be happy about this?
Well, I mean, so this is one of these things that I think is more addressing than substance. But
like his whole presidency. Keep going.
Touche, my friend. Touché. There you go.
Burn, man. We give the man a chance.
Okay.
Well, so this is one of these things that for the people who want to criticize President Trump, it gave an opportunity to blow back. Right? We had the first African American president, and he didn't do it. So this is one of these things that he says that, hey, you know, he thinks HBCUs have provided a service, and he's trying to show with executive order that he's standing behind the statements he said. That's essentially what it is.
My problem is this. I just don't understand what it means or why it's relevant.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this executive order means anything at all. I agree, Jamar.
The only thing that I can tell that is, I'm doing air quotes to the listeners, is good about it so far, is that it basically moves the domain of HBCUs from the Department of Education, which means it'd be under the control of Betsy DeVos, directly to the authority of the White House. So a policymaker within the White House staff would be responsible for funds allocations and things like that. But the HBCU presidents as a group were asking for a reported $25 billion that still has to be lobbied from Congress. So the order just says, hey, I'm going to move you guys under my umbrella out from under the Department of Education, and that's it. So all these woke Negroes out here right now that want to say, well, Obama never did anything for us, neither has this man. All right? Just keep it all in perspective.
I just want to highlight in the civics lesson that Congress spends the money. Congress allocates the money. So Trump can say whatever he wants, but Congress has to send that money to HBCUs. Exactly. So this is kind of like with the jobs thing in Ohio, right? You know, President Obama was having 100,000 jobs staying in America, and then everybody's excited because he had 700. And so this is just kind of one of these things that he can do and get glory from it. It'll be in the news. It'll make him look like he's being more open and considering more diversity. And, I mean, it's mostly just a media play.
Yeah, so when Trump goes and destroys Chicago, he can say, but look, I tried to give the blacks money to go to school.
Right. Yeah. And you know he's going to add that S on it like they did on those signs at his campaign.
Blacks.
Trump's for blacks.
Blacks. But here's my other question I had. So Betsy DeVos yesterday put out a statement saying that HBCUs were like the originators of school choice.
Yeah, the original model for school choice. So
it's like the exact opposite of what HBCUs were for, right? They're called separate but equal, which means we had to go to them because they were separate, but they were quote-unquote equal.
To them folks, it's like, look, here's your choice.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like when you have interns writing your speech, these are the kind of things you say to people.
Here's your choice.
Yeah. I think all my Trump praise aside, Betsy DeVos, maybe... the most egregious thing that has happened in politics in the last 20 years, except for one. And that was John Maverick McCain, who picked Sarah Palin as his vice presidential candidate. That was worse than Betsy DeVos, because she was going to have way more power. She could have been president, you know. But this Betsy DeVos pick, I mean, to think that HBCUs are school choice, man, it's just mind-boggling.
Right. And they got 10 minutes with the president. That's it. They got into the Oval Office long enough to take that picture so he could take a picture with the blacks, frame it, and put it on a wall somewhere where a bunch of other black people can see it when they walk through the White House. And that's essentially what that whole thing was.
It's a white person saying, look, I have black friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he said it during the campaign. Mike, that's my African American over there.
Yeah.
That was a direct quote, Michael, by the way, before you jump in the phone booth.
All Mike is saying is that homie has come a long way, right? He used to say that's my African American over there. Then he went from that to saying the blacks, right? He had the blacks. We progressed to like 1990s. And now, you know, he's taking care of all the HCBUs out there.
I think that education for African Americans is huge, and I think that, you know, those schools are very important wherever they are out there. And so I think Kellyanne Conway did a fantastic job sitting on the couch and taking that picture.
Exactly. It's terrible, man.
I got in trouble for cursing already. I ain't gonna say the F word right now. So
the other thing about Betsy DeVos is, you know, most of her experimentation happened in Michigan. And basically the direct result of that is that Michigan went from ranked in the 20s on average for schools to the 40s. And she defunded and shuttled money. So from purely an experimental standpoint, I'm not too optimistic.
So now y'all are back there with like Mississippi and Alabama now.
Yeah, we like in front of Alabama.
Shout out
But they're way above Texas. Last.
Shout
way
out
above
Betsy.
Texas.
Now, I think we're in the Texas area. But Mississippi is always last. So
Texas is always like 48.
47. Mississippi, man, it's struggling.
Man,
all you cats got educated in Texas. Huh?
But look, we laughed a lot about this. But on a serious note, look out for the future of what happens to HBCUs in the next couple months, because it'll be one of two things. Either one, this executive order will be what we think it is, which is nothing. Or two, it might have an unintended or maybe intended negative side effect for students at the schools or for people who are interested in making sure those schools are preserved. So let's move on to some other issues. So the Oscars happened on Sunday night, and that was a complete cluster as well. There were a few great moments. Viola Davis, for example, she won Best Supporting Actress for Fences. She's the first African-American woman. She might be the first woman, period, actually, to win an Oscar, a Tony, and an Emmy. Of course, Denzel didn't win, because why would he?
First female to win them for acting alone. There are other African-Americans, but they won them in, like, directing and acting. So, like, Whoopi has, like, five. I mean, she has, like, everything.
There you go. Okay.
But purely for being an actress, she's the first to get all three.
Yeah, I think it's trash Denzel didn't win. I agree with you, Vern.
You know, I think Denzel will be one of those actors that gets his award past his way after it's been due.
And, well, he's got two already. He has a Best Supporting and a Best Actor already, but
yeah,
still.
But he's been in way more roles than that.
He only has two.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about Pelham 1-2-3. We're talking about he's had some great roles that, you know, garnered extreme consideration that he also didn't even get nominations for. So what about Gary Allen Cole when they had the skit where they brought the passengers off the tour bus?
Oh, it was hilarious. Hilarious.
The problem is at the end of the day, our people will be our people, man.
Yeah. they should have known, man.
So when he said, he's like, oh, it looks like you're skipping all the white actors and actresses.
Damn.
he say I am?
Yeah, he said I am. Yeah.
I mean, I saw him do it, but I didn't hear him say I am.
Yeah, he said
I was like, I got big eyed. I was like, he did that?
Yeah. Yeah. He gave no dams about anything. And then, so this whole incident with Moonlight winning Best Picture, which was probably, you know, I feel badly about the Moonlight incident because the next day people weren't talking about the movie and how good it was for the most part. They were simply talking about Warren Beatty and, you know, how La La Land, how the executive producer was gracious in defeat and all these things. But nobody really talked about the actual film itself. And that was kind of sad because Mahershala Ali also got Best Supporting Actor for that role at 39 years old. He's also the first Muslim to win an Oscar. And so nobody was talking about a lot of that because they were all focused on the fact that they effed up the presentation. Like when we have that conversation where we say you literally had one job, all they had to do was get the envelope to the podium. And they messed that up. Shout out to PricewaterhouseCooper for that.
So the one interesting thing about this is I was like, man, they're going to be dragging Steve Harvey's name through the mud again. Like, yeah. Like time had passed and they like they did a Steve Harvey. Like Steve Harvey getting hammered again. I do want to give a shout out, though, about this term intersectionality. Mm-hmm. So African-Americans that are also Muslim is a huge portion of the Muslim population. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we had kind of an African-American as well as a Muslim win an award, I was pretty pleased. It shows kind of the diversity in that religion. You know, it's not all one people from the Middle East. You know, lots of people are affected by these policies.
There you go.
That was another shout.
I think also, you know, the thing that struck me the most is that there is a black person that was highlighted in almost every category. So that was cool to see. You know, even if you don't win, it's a great honor just to be nominated.
Correct.
But I still think about the American Black Film Festival Awards or honors. There's lots of black stars out there. But why aren't our own awards coveted from our own people, coveted just as much as the Oscars or the Grammys? How come we don't give ourselves the same due as, you know, others? Like, why aren't the NAACP awards a big deal in our community? Why aren't, you know, the BET awards or honors a big deal in our community?
Don't get me started on NAACP awards.
Jamar, what do you think about that?
Well, you got to understand, you know, I hate to keep bringing up money all the time, but the economics of it, right? Like, what media outlets do we control, right? Do we have, you know, not just a seat at the table, but control over, right?
Eccentric. That's black.
Right. So, I don't know anything about it. I don't know if y'all are familiar with this. Are y'all familiar with the actor Byron Allen?
Yeah.
He owns a ton of like networks and TV shows. He's a billionaire. He's actually suing the government. He was suing Obama at the time too, mm-hmm. because you know, the federal government have so many billions of dollars that they use to allocate towards advertising into media and print, press, things like that throughout the year. And barely a half a percent of a half percent was used towards black media, mm-hmm. right? And he's suing the federal government because of that, right? And there's laws on the book that says they're supposed to spend, you know, so much in these different communities, but all these other communities are getting it, but not black media. And which also in turns is one of the reasons why we have a difficult time having black media being, you know, electrified or showcased and things like that, because we don't get media is still driven by eyeballs and advertising dollars, right? And if you can't get the advertising dollars, you can't get, you know, you won't be able to market to get the eyeballs on it, and it's a self-perpetuating cycle that it just gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, I'm listening to Sunday morning radio, which I never do, but I'm listening to it, and you know, they got check cashing and payday loan commercials in between the gospel songs, right? Because that's who's advertising to us, yeah. Right? Because of that. But that's what I think. Because like, I didn't even know about the awards until afterwards, until I saw somebody have a clip of Denzel because he had an amazing quote. Actually, I even shared it on my Facebook page, but exactly. We don't hear about it, right? Where do we go to get that information?
I agree. And Mike, what's your problem with the NAACP awards?
They gave one to Jeff Sessions.
What?
Boom.
Boom.
That's my problem with the NAACP awards. They gave them to everybody. Him
for what?
I think for his community contributions being. Yeah. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But they've given them to a lot of people who. They gave one to what is it, the dude Sterling used to own the Clippers? He got one.
Yeah, Donald Sterling got one.
Donald Sterling.
Yeah, he got one right before he just made that super racist comment.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that they don't have clout. You know,
NAACP, Al Sharpton, all these cats, they lay down, they'll get down with anybody that writes them a check, man.
Yeah, and if you get a chance, look up what Jamar is talking about. The Byron Allen lawsuit is actually a $10 billion discrimination lawsuit. And it's still going on right now. So it's important that we keep up with these things. Now, before we get to the parting shots, let's talk about this Nicki Minaj, Remy Ma, Sheether diss track that came out over the weekend. This is a kid-friendly show, so there's only so much we can say. I'm going to just be straightforward with you on our agenda. It says, did Papoose ghostwrite the whole rhyme? I don't even care. What I heard was enough to make me cringe. I couldn't believe some of the stuff that was said. Guys, what do you think?
I mean, in my personal opinion, Remy Ma, she can rhyme. I don't think Papoose wrote it for her. She's been writing her own things for a long time. She can stand on the strength of her own rhymes. And, I mean, sheether is the exact right word. Because besides ether, you know, that was a pretty, pretty, pretty big diss. Good diss.
Yeah.
Non-stop fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole time.
Anytime you can... And anytime you can hit a beat ether, that beat is just awesome. Yeah. So with that in the opening, it was like, it's going to go hard.
And I think that Nicki's radio silence says everything. She's like, let me weather the storm with my millions of dollars.
Right.
You can't come back from that. You can't come back from that. She just got flat out murdered. But see, Remy Ma used to be a battle rapper. Like, that's how she got, you know what I'm saying? That's how she got her clout on the streets. So. That ain't, you know, this ain't new for her. Like, we ain't heard her in like a decade, but.
Right.
Because she was in jail.
I mean, based on what we've heard tonight, part of being a battle rapper is simply showing up and giving rhymes. So I guess Remy Ma did what she was supposed to do. She looked like a battle rapper and she said battle rhymes and like Donald Trump says his stuff and she did good. So yeah, there you go. Shout out to Mike.
So remember Jamar and his buckets? we put that analogy in the horrible bucket.
Shout out to Mike for Remy Ma showing up and reading the rhymes that somebody else wrote for her, but still doing a good job.
Hey, man, you don't know she read those rhymes, bro. You don't know she that was written for her or not.
I mean, she tried to perform it the next night, and she couldn't.
I mean, what does that mean?
Well, if I wrote it, I would know my own words to my own song that I wrote the next day.
Did you not see Iggy Azalea that one time when she was freestyling?
Iggy Azalea is not a rapper, and she doesn't freestyle. And are you comparing, just for the record? For the record,
I'm saying the players mess up. That's all I'm saying. Mess up.
And you use Iggy Azalea as your example. That's like the worst example ever.
You can't clown Kurt, and you can't even say her name right. That's the other thing. Yeah, you're gonna clown somebody's name wrong.
Vern just gave the worst analogy in the history of the world. Trying to compare Remy Ma to Donald Trump.
No. I'm comparing the fact that she showed up, she read something else that somebody wrote for her, and she did a good job doing it.
Most people don't think that was written for her.
Well, it's on the... Yeah, I think a lot of people think somebody else ghostwrote it for her.
Some people are accusing it.
Right, exactly. Some people are actually saying that.
Well, I would say most people aren't, though.
No? Anyway, are we good to go to our parting shots now? I'm going to lead off. Jamar, you will go second. My parting shot, and we've talked about most of this stuff already, but my parting shot is essentially like a Snickers commercial or a Southwest Airlines commercial where you want to get away. So I'm trying to figure out who had the worst week of all. Trump's had his, you know, I guess according to my homies tonight, Trump's week didn't end that badly, but his Secretary of the Navy nominee withdrew, and it just seems like he keeps on having people that keep dropping out of the process or having to end up dropping out. The Oscars got the best picture presentation wrong at the end, and that was all spearheaded by PricewaterhouseCooper. And then Nikki got blasted in his freestyle, like we said a few minutes ago. So, you know, when you think that your life is bad, and you think that things have just gotten really out of whack, or, you know, like your financial buckets ain't really stacking up like they're supposed to be, or, you know, you operating on a patient and, you know, something, you know, bad happens or you have a setback. Just remember, you could be Nicki Minaj and have all your business out in the street. Or you could be the guy that gave Warren Beatty the wrong movie card that ended up getting, I think he got, if he didn't get fired, he got in a lot of trouble. And now they're saying PricewaterhouseCooper might not even be the sponsor anymore. Or you could just be Donald Trump, which I won't rehash that, but depending on how you look at it, it could be good or bad. So just count your blessings. That's my overall point, all right? And that's my parting shot.
My parting shot tonight is more of a challenge, right? It's more of a challenge to us on this show. I love this show because you talk about things that matter to us and you talk about being a change, right? So one of the most important things I think we could do is kind of not only get our financial house in order, but to support other black businesses. And one of the black businesses that is very that nobody really talks about a whole lot, but it's kind of gotten some more play in the past year or two, are black banks. And if you can find it in your heart, right, take a minute, find a black bank that's near you. There's one actually that's an online bank you can look up. I'm sorry I don't have that on top of my head right now. But consider depositing some money into a black bank that invests in black businesses, that invest in black neighborhoods, because we know if we can invest with ourselves, we can hire our own. There was a number out, a study that was out, and they were talking about how much the dollar circulates in the black community. And when a dollar enters the black community, it circulates in the black community for about 6 hours before it leaves, right? Compare that to a Jewish community or a Chinese community or, you know, things like that. You're looking at 18 days and 26 days versus 6 hours. Even in Hispanic community, their dollar circulates for almost a week, right? Versus us, 6 hours before the dollar leaves the community and goes into somebody else's. So my challenge is everybody is to find you a black or minority-owned bank or a bank that does the things that you believe in and support that. Use your dollars. Vote with your dollars, regardless of what Trump says, right? Our dollars matter, and those are the things that make the difference. And if we don't get our economics in place, we'll never get our politics in place, because to be able to come into politics, you got to be able to play, right? And it's a pay-to-play deal, right? And it's going to be like that, at least for the foreseeable future. So my parting shot is just a challenge to us to get out there, pay a little bit more attention, and see if we can find us a bank to put our money in that cares about the things we care about.
Yeah, and to Jamar's point, actually, Unity Bank in Houston is actually a black-owned bank that had an HBCU initiative that was started, I believe, in August of 2016. So we had DJ on a couple of episodes back, and he was able to give us some information about that. So you can check out Unity Bank as well.
So today, my parting shot is for the liberals. Now, anybody who listens to this podcast or who see my Facebook page in the last year and a half knows that I'm a liberal. No doubt about it. Tried and true and blue. But I think it is now time for real action. Donald Trump expressed a lot of liberal views during that address yesterday. He talked about infrastructure. Let's hold his feet to the fire. Let's get an infrastructure bill, because the Republicans will not vote for it. Let's hold them accountable. He talked about some immigration reform. Let's hold his feet to the fire. Let's see what he really does when the rubber meets the road. He talked about supporting HBCUs. Awesome. Let's hold his feet to the fire. Let's see what he really does. Because the only way to show his supporters that he's not telling the truth is to show them that this man is not a man of his word. Because so far, if he's done nothing else, he's been a man of his word. So let's hold this man to the fire. Let's see if he can really deliver on the things that he's talking about. And if he can, hell, maybe he deserves 4 more years in office. I like that face, Vern. I like that face.
That's tough. That's tough.
Defeat.
Right. Oh, man. So my parting shot, I'm going to give a shout out to Elon Musk. You guys have heard me talk about the decline in science in America. We talked about
statistics and the perception of academic studies not being important. And so, you know, I want to highlight Elon Musk because he's taken some bold steps. And he's taken the combination of ingenuity and science in great stylistic form, kind of like Steve Jobs has done, to get people more interested in things that are related to science. And he's taken hardcore science improvements. So he's put significant computer tech in his car. So he has an all-electric car that literally all you have to do is download the latest software to upgrade its performance, its handling, its speed. Everybody loves the Tesla. He has come up with complete ways to power your house using these battery packs. He also has come out with these new solar panels that just look like tiles on your roof, and you can get many aesthetic designs. So he's even revolutionized the aesthetics behind having solar panels on your roof to make your house more green. And I'm going to have to tell you, the real reason I'm talking about Elon Musk is because I'm interested in outer space. And SpaceX has been doing some cool stuff. They recently delivered some payloads to the space station. But I don't even care about that. He just came out and said that he's going to try to send two tourists around the moon on a space rocket. Now, I've always wanted to go to outer space. And if I can say my bucket's enough, if I can ever get an opportunity to go to outer space and see the moon, sign your boy up. That's my parting shot.
So we want to thank Jamar once again, the Money Misfit of Get Your Money Right podcast, for coming on and kicking it with us. He dropped quite a bit of knowledge about money management. I strongly urge you guys to go check out his website, and you can find archives of his past episodes there, but you can also find his new material. You can also subscribe to him on iTunes. And then to our listeners.
No, man, thanks again for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, y'all. This is a whole lot of fun, man. I hopefully y'all have me back on here one day. Talk a little bit more about that Tesla or something.
Yeah, we'll talk about Trump next time you come back. If he's still Trump, in office. Trump. Exactly. Mike, what's the website?
UniversityCollegePodcast.wordpress.com.
Kurt, what's the Instagram?
@UCollege.
And you can find us on Twitter at UNIBCollegeBTC. That is University College Be the Change. You can also find us on Facebook at the same name. Guys, we had a great episode tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening.
Stay woke.
Peace. Peace.